And now, from the Green 960 studios in San Francisco, this is an organic conversation with Helga Hellberg and Mark Mulcahy.
And welcome to this week's edition of An Organic Conversation, a show about food, relationships, and life itself. I'm your host, Helga Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
Thank you for your emails and comments that we've received. Cheryl is commenting on my recent blog of trying to be a human being, not a human doer. She writes, "Be a human being, not a human doer," has been my mantra for the past year, with continuous awareness of how easy it is for me to slip right back into the old ways. Only now it is justified with a new purpose, as I have let go of a crazy career in the automotive finance arena. I find myself spending even more time on my computer, attending classes online, and working part-time as a waitress. Today, my energy level is much higher, but how much time do I really leave for friends and family and to just be? Your blog about too much doing as another form of violence, silently accepted, identifies the struggle still within me. Thank you for this awareness and the reminder to make time just for myself, just to be. Yes, thank you, Cheryl, and thank you for taking the time to write this comment. Another thing on your list, I'm sure. And even though I wished you had taken the time for yourself, I'm glad you didn't. If you have a comment or question, please email us at share@anorganicconversation.com. I'm very excited about our guests today, as we are talking about seeds, heirloom seeds, and the important work of seed banks and seed companies to guarantee our food in the future. More about that in a minute when we come back. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And we'll be right back after the break.
Schätze jeden Glauben hoch, auch ich misstraue über Eifer. Es sei am besten jeder froh mit dem, was er glaubt oder mit dem, was er weiß. Doch der, an den ich glaube, ist auch der, den ich preise. Sie nicht.
And we're back here to An Organic Conversation on Green 960. I'm your host, Helga Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And with us in the studio today are two wonderful gentlemen, Paul Wallace and Jeremiah Jere Gettle from the Baker Creek Heirloom Seed Company. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
Paul, I was driving through Petaluma the other day, a few weeks ago, and I noticed this gigantic corner old bank building, and you guys had turned it into a seed bank. what an amazingly creative way to take an old real bank. I don't know which one is actually more real, but to turn it into a seed bank. Tell us how that happened.
I guess initially, the company is based out of Missouri, and quite a large percentage of the catalog and online business is coming from the Petaluma area and the county surrounding us in Petaluma. And Jerry came out here, I guess, in the spring of 2009, looking for a location to expand the business and open another bricks and mortar store, and found this old, fabulous old bank building on the corner of Petaluma Boulevard North and Washington Street.
That just happened to be for rent.
Just happened to be for rent. I mean, it was meant to be. It was fate. Yeah. So now in the seed bank, we house about over 1,400 varieties of heirloom seed. And we have a selection of tools and a selection of books, gardening books, how-to books, and some locally produced items as well, honeys and jams and preserves and olive oils.
So you basically saw that many of the orders came from this area, and you decided from your online business to bring it to where the orders came from.
Yes, indeed. In fact, there's a lot of like-minded people in the area, and there is a huge upswing in people growing their own gardens and being more conscious of what they're ingesting.
So, Jared, what is your business and how did it start?
Well, it all started with a hobby. I had always been interested in gardening. My parents and grandparents were all gardeners, and my aunts and uncles were all gardeners. And I grew up in the Boise Valley for the first few years, and they all had huge gardens. So I started collecting seeds and reading seed catalogs and looking through seed catalogs as early as I can remember. And I always remember, even when I was 4 and 5, thinking that someday I'd either want to work at a seed company or be part somehow with a seed company.
What, how is that possible? Like, it says in your bio, you were like, from the age of 4 months on, you could not be pulled out of the garden or something like that, I read.
Yeah, it's basically, I just grew up, my parents had like a 2-acre vegetable garden on the place, and my aunts and uncles all gardened near us in the Boise Valley. So it pretty much, I got interested in seeing like 20 or 30 different kinds of squash, for instance, growing in our garden. So it was just fascinating. And then actually Sunset Magazine, I was reading an article in there that in 1990, and that's where I really got into heirloom seeds. I was about 10 years old at the time, and they had an article on heirlooms, and it was one of the first articles that actually came out talking about heirlooms and talking about the need to preserve them. And that's where I really started getting interested and started saving seed. And I guess when I was about 17, I thought I might as well just try producing a little price list and see where it goes. And that's kind of where it started in 1998. So
can you explain to our listeners what exactly is an heirloom seed?
An heirloom seed is basically just a kind of a somewhat generic term. It's just the same as you'd apply to furniture or something that's passed down through families or through generations. And different people have different definitions on how old something needs to be. But in general, it's just something that's been passed down just like anything else. And it's something that has a lot of history to it. So,
that's interesting that you're saying that. And I purposely wanted to have Helga ask that question today, because when I went to look up heirloom seeds, I found like 3 or 4 different definitions. People saying, it has to be pre-1950, pre-World War II, or, before we started doing a lot of hybridization and things like that. There was like all these different definitions. And I was thinking, well, how's someone to understand what an heirloom is if people can't even agree on what an heirloom is?
Yeah, it's just a generic term for an open pollinated vegetable or flower that's been passed down, it's just a generic word that's kind of used to describe varieties that have been passed down and are not altered or changed really in any way. They're just kept true, even if some of the traits, they might not be as beautiful as some of the perfectly round red tomatoes. They might be a little rough on the shoulders, but they still have the same great taste and the same disease resistance or whatever else was bred into them originally. So,
you're listening to An Organic Conversation here on Green 960. I'm Helga Hilberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And we're speaking about seeds today, particularly heirloom seeds, with Paul Wallace and Jared Gettle from the Baker Seed Heirloom Seed Company, who started literally a seed bank in a bank building in Petaluma, here to bring their amazing seeds to the wider Bay Area. Paul, you were saying 1,400 varieties of seeds.
Right, 1,400.
Like what? Well, of what?
as you go through the store, we alphabetize the store's shelving. So you start with the amaranth, and you go through the artichoke, and you work your way through the beets and the carrots and the cabbage and the cauliflower all the way through, and you end up with the watermelon. So we have close to 200 varieties of tomato, a couple of dozen varieties of cucumber. On the eggplant side, we probably have, 24 or 25 eggplant types, lots and lots of greens.
So 200 varieties of tomatoes.
Right. So on the tomato side, we would start with,
started salivating.
Right.
Well, they brought one of my favorites here today.
So. Right. Which is what?
The black creme.
Why do you like it?
It's kind of a sweet acidy flavor, and it just, I don't know, early girls. Tomatoes and black cremes are my two favorites. It's a sweet acidy flavor, and they usually get fairly good size, and you cut into them and they have this kind of purple red inside color. And it's like, if you want to make a sandwich out of a tomato, I think a black creme is probably one of your best tomatoes you could make it out of.
Taste wise and
it's got a great texture too.
Looks,
yeah. I mean, it can get a little bit soft, but it can be it's a great slicing tomato.
And I would think that you, Paul, you're the manager of that seed bank, and you know every single seed by name, pretty much, right? I mean, can you, if somebody walks in, you can tell them based on the soil type they have, based on the climate they have, because here in the Bay Area, we have, the coastal region, and then as soon as you get 20 miles inland, it's really a different climate zone. right. different microclimate. Do you know how every single seed basically is grown best?
We try. I mean, every day we learn something new. As people say, you're no point in getting up in the morning unless you learn something new every day. So every day we're learning. Even where our store is located in Petaluma, on one side of Petaluma, you're going to have a clay adobe soil. On the other side of Petaluma, your soil conditions are totally different.
Wow.
If you go 10 miles in one direction, you will not be able to grow watermelon. If you grow 10 miles in the other direction, you will. So there's a lot of microclimates. There's a lot of variables. So you got to work with the customer and try and fit them into what suits their needs best.
And out of 200 varieties of tomatoes, I would think you have an answer for most people, if
Absolutely.
Not for
Absolutely.
All of them.
Right.
Where are those seeds coming from? Jared, you started your seed company. The first catalog was a kind of a black and white photocopied version.
Yeah, it was black and white, took it down to the Office Max or whatever, the different copy shops, and copied the first actually 2 years.
And you sent it to 500 people that you knew were gardeners?
Basically, we'd also put some ads like in the local farm publications, a few newspapers and whatnot. So it was basically from that. And then the next year, was right before Y2K. So that kind of spurred on a lot of people to getting back to the land. And that really helped give us a boost. And then ever since then, it's just heirlooms have really taken off in the last 10 years. And
yeah,
everybody talks about them now. So.
Food awareness and gardening has really, especially in the last 4 years, has completely changed the way we appreciate food and the way we see our connection to soil and the land. But where did you get your seeds from back then, and how has that changed?
Well, pretty much through different collectors and seed traders and different people like that I knew. And over the years, though, it's just various sources. People send you a little envelope in the mail and say, this has been in my family for 150 years. Will you be able to keep it going? They'll send you the history, who grew it. Other times, somebody will send you a box of seeds in Portugal and say, these are 40 varieties that have been grown in Portugal for a long time. You might want to try them. And then we also have taken like about 6 or 7 different trips, mostly to either Central America and Mexico or Southeast Asia, and collected some of our own seeds as well. So various sources. And we actually get more seeds in every year than we're able to grow and produce. I mean, it's hundreds of varieties a year come in, and we're usually able to grow about 100 or so new varieties each year. So
when you get a handful of seeds, you actually have a farm where you plant those in trials, and you try to produce commercial volume of that. Is that right?
We have a farm, and we also have different growers throughout the United States that produce seeds for us. So some of them are just home gardeners, and some of them are farmers and whatnot. But it's by and large, it's people that are small and they're really passionate about preserving seed, and that's why they want to do it. I mean, it's pretty much very labor intensive for a lot of the rare varieties. But
how do you deal with seeds from outside the country? Because I know when I come back from Germany after visiting my family, I have to fill out this little card, and it says, "Do you have a seed anywhere?" I think it says that. Did you bring any seeds or plants or fruit or?
Yeah, the last time I flew, they only had plants on there.
Oh,
so
gotcha.
And I don't know.
Yeah, and then we don't ask.
So you didn't
right.
ask.
No.
But I haven't flown actually in several years, so it's
okay,
I don't know what's on there now.
So we're moving on. This is an organic conversation here on Green 960. I'm your host Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And we are talking today about seeds, heirloom varieties of seeds, with Paul Wallace, store manager of the Seed Bank in Petaluma, and Jared Gettle from the Baker Creek Heirloom Seed Company. And so 1,400 different varieties of seeds, 200 different varieties of tomatoes in that store in Petaluma. What's the volume you go through? Like how many producers do you have that grow seeds for you? And how tedious is it? What's the process of you actually making a pound of seeds that are identified and clean and clear, so that there's no interaction with other. These are heirloom seeds of that variety.
Sure.
They haven't interbred. And that's, a pound of seeds, tomatoes, you plug them right out of a tomato. I mean, I'm just.
Yeah, basically, we have about 75 different growers that are growing for us now. And, they vary in size and they vary in methods of cleaning. But generally for tomatoes, basically you just smash up the whole fruit and let it ferment for about 3 days. The seeds sink, everything else floats. So it makes it fairly easy. It probably takes, anywhere from 10 pounds of tomatoes to 25 pounds of tomatoes or more to make an ounce of seed. So
an ounce.
Yeah. So, and some varieties is up to 40 pounds maybe per ounce. So you're talking, you know, a fair amount for a pound. You're talking, you know, quite a few hundred pounds of, you know, in general tomato seeds, depending on varieties, you know, 200-400 pounds probably on average.
And now your original company from 500 black and white copies of catalog, what, 10 years ago? When did that start?
Yeah, about 12 years
ago. Yeah, 12 years ago has now grown into a color catalog that is beautiful and 250,000 copies.
Yeah, that's correct. It's a lot of interest the last few years. I mean, everybody's talking about them. All the chefs are talking about them. And just word of mouth among neighbors. I mean, somebody will grow something and tell their other neighbors and garden club members and Lion Club members and whatever organization they belong to, church groups, just all sorts of groups. They're all, it just spreads so fast because people grow something and take it to a big group and they all taste it. And then next year, everybody wants to try, you know, Cherokee Purple or Black Cream or one of these unusual looking things. When people first see them, it's like, what's that? And then, you know, once they try them, it really sells people on the heirloom and local produce. I mean, people have gotten so used to getting everything from the store. Just having fresh, homegrown produce again is new to a lot of people. So it's really good to see that coming back.
Yes, good seeds spread indeed. But 250,000 catalog, and you need 25 pounds of tomatoes to make 1 ounce?
You know, up to, that's in the average range somewhere. It varies all over. A cherry tomato, some of them are very seedy, and it's probably 1 ounce for every 8 pounds. And some of the Roma tomatoes might be 1 ounce for every 50 pounds. They vary a lot.
But with 250,000 catalogs, you must go through 1 ounce of tomato seeds in about 4 minutes.
Yeah, it varies. We probably sell on tomatoes anywhere from about 500 packs on the slower sellers to about up to 10,000 packs on the more popular items on tomatoes.
A month?
A year.
A year.
In the 200 varieties, because in things that we have that many varieties on, it dilutes how many, because most gardeners aren't going to plant all 200. Most of them are going to plant anywhere from 3 to 5. Some gardeners plant 20 or 30 varieties, but more than that, not very many gardeners do a whole lot more than that. So,
wonderful. Okay. We will dive into this topic even deeper. Our guests today from the Baker Creek Heirloom Seed Company, Jared Gettle and Paul Wallace. This is An Organic Conversation on Green 960. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And we'll be right back after the break.
An Organic Conversation is brought to you by Spotica Skincare. Founded by Janet League Katzen, Spotica is a holistic approach to skincare that is 100% pure and natural, free of synthetic chemicals, and includes organic and wild-crafted ingredients. For more information about Spotica Skincare products and the Spotica Spa, visit spotica.com. That's SPHATIKA.com.
My name is Earl Herrick, and I am the owner of Earl's Organic Produce, a San Francisco Bay Area distributor fully committed to organic produce. From the time one could find organic fruits and vegetables only in natural food stores to now, when schools and fine restaurants feature organic, we have been forging relationships with growers for over 20 years. If you want to offer the finest organic produce to your employees or customers, find us at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
For the ultimate West Marin experience, visit Toby's Feed Barn in Point Reyes Station, home of the Point Reyes Farmers Market every Saturday. Toby's Feed Barn features organic produce, native plants, gifts, books, an organic coffee bar, an art gallery, concerts, even daily yoga classes. Toby's Feed Barn in downtown Point Reyes Station, open 7 days a week, family owned and operated since 1942, a West Marin original. For more information, visit tobysfeedbarn.com.
Frye Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Frye never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Frye organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Frye Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines, without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at fryewine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Marin Organic, an association of organic food producers in Marin County, California, is helping to create a healthy and sustainable food shed just north of the Golden Gate Bridge. A model for how to feed a region in a way that is economically viable, environmentally sound, socially just, and culturally appropriate. The opportunity to change the world is right on our place. Be a part of the solution. For more information on Marin Organic and how to support its efforts, visit marinorganic.org.
And we are back here to an organic conversation on Green 960. I'm your host, Helge Hellberg. And with me also, Mark Mulcahy.
I was rocking out there to the intro music.
You're looking at seed packages, and I understand that.
Well, no, I was actually just sitting there rocking out.
Yes, our new intro music. We hope you like it. With us in the studio is Paul Wallace and Jared Gettle from the Baker Creek Heirloom Seed Company. And Paul is the manager of the seed bank, an old bank building that the Baker Creek Heirloom Seed Company took over that was for rent. When was that, Paul? Half a year ago?
It was in June of 2009.
Yeah. In Petaluma, here in the wider San Francisco Bay Area, turning it into a seed bank, from a money bank to a seed bank. And I think that's a good move. And we were talking about heirloom seed varieties.
Yeah, which made me, I have a question for you, Jerry, is I was wondering, are all your seed varieties organic? That's a big thing now. And so people are wondering about, you know, organic and heirloom. They kind of tie those two things together sometimes.
Yeah, our varieties actually are, we actually don't offer any certified organic seeds. There's lots of good companies out there that do. But our main focus is getting a lot of these older varieties back into circulation. And some of them are in really small quantities. So we actually work with a lot of home gardeners, small farmers. Some are certified, but many are not. I mean, most home gardeners aren't going to certify, and even a lot of the small market gardeners, people know what they're getting when they buy from them, so they're not certified. But our seeds are suitable, you know, if you can't find it somewhere else for organic production, but not. If you're looking for a large volume of seeds that are certified organic, you can definitely find those, you know, from other sources. But what we basically specialize in is somebody wanting to get something different for a fresh market, a home garden, a chef, a lot of museums and places like that get our seeds because we're the only source for, you know, probably 600 or 700 of the different things we offer are pretty near the only source, at least in the United States.
So out of the 1,400 different varieties of seeds, you were saying, and when we talked earlier, that if they had to be certified organic, it would basically come down to 350, 400 varieties?
Yeah, we would basically lose a lot of what we had just because the cost and expense in producing larger volumes and less variety. Because right now we can offer a lot of variety, but from a business point, it probably doesn't make a lot of sense because people are only going to buy so many kinds of tomatoes out of a catalog. Right. But our main goal is keeping the 200 or 300 or as many as we can alive. So we're keep increasing our variety and try to keep people growing it and saving seed on their own on these rare varieties. Because otherwise, if we have a crop failure or something would happen to us temporarily or long term, I mean, these varieties would disappear. So, I mean, we got to get them out there and get them popular again.
So the Baker Creek Heirloom Seed Company is really focused on diversity of protecting old seed varieties of varieties that you can't even get in many other places anymore.
That's our goal, and our other goal is getting varieties from as many different diverse places as possible. We have varieties from about 70 different countries now, and we're hoping to get that above 70.
70.
Yeah, and we're hoping to get that above 100 in the next few years. I mean, we're trying to get seeds from basically everywhere. So if somebody comes to us from pretty much any country, we'll be able to replace their heritage. There's so many people that move here and don't have the varieties they remember when they were kids growing up in different places. So.
And so do you, like you said, you have different backyard growers growing, and I know you started in Missouri, and now we have you have a bank in Petaluma. But when you are your farmers all over the United States, are your growers all over the United States? Because a seed like that came from the Mediterranean region or came from the Middle East or someplace like that might grow better in one region than it would in another, right?
That is true. There's a lot of varieties, though, that are adapted pretty much to everywhere, but there is probably that 25% that do well in just one region or another. So we do have growers throughout the United States, and fortunately, you know, in many areas like California and the warmer climates, if you, depending on the season, you can pretty much grow any crop between winter and spring and fall and summer. Pretty much you have enough seasons in a lot of areas to grow any crop if you do it right and plant the crop, cool season crops in the cooler parts of the year. So
and the National Organic Program, the law that governs organic production, you were saying none of your seeds are certified organic, but the law does say that if the seed you like to grow is not available in a commercial way, in a certified organic form, you can choose the non-organic seed and still call your vegetable organic if the seed is not treated. And Paul, you were saying none of your seeds are treated, right?
These That's correct.
Are all kind of boutique-y. I don't necessarily like that name, but or calling it that. But it's kind of the specialized, you know, highly, highly diverse. You said earlier 200 different varieties of tomatoes alone, not treated. So they're all grown. You could call it organic, but it's not certified, but the final product because they are not treated. Can you explain what treated means in this case? What do seed companies do that sell like fully commercial treated seeds? What is that process?
There are many, many different things you could do to treat your seed, but they could be chemically treated or they could be genetically altered in some way, shape, or form. So all of ours are open pollinated and non-treated, non-patented. So they're as close to nature as you can get it.
And if you were to chemically treat a seed, what does that look like? Just for our listeners to, Jerry, can you talk about that?
Yeah, normally companies are required if they treat the seed to color it. So if you notice pink seed, which is the commonest, there's also blue or yellow. But generally pink or red is what you'll see a dye on the seed. And it's generally applied to corn, sometimes cucumbers, radishes. And they're also required in general. They're required always, but in general, they follow the rule to put a little note on the back of the packet that says treated with whatever. And it's just a variety of chemicals. Most of them, you know, you don't really know what is going to do to you if you touch them or if your kids eat them. But it's we don't really want any part of that. It's really unnecessary. It's mostly just put on there so farmers can plant seeds before they're really time to plant them and keep them from rotting, or also to keep insects from eating the seeds.
So if the soil is too wet still and they shouldn't plant them, they can plant them if they have a chemical coating of some sort.
Yeah, it's something that is really not that necessary, and I think we'll get less and less in time, especially among home gardeners. I think it's already getting less and less. Unfortunately, commercial chemical farmers are, you know, they pretty much want any kind of thing they can get to give them the advantage over their neighbors. But
yeah. Jared Gettel from the Baker Seed Heirloom Creek Seed Company, starting in Missouri, now with Paul Wallace as the manager, having taken over a bank and turned it into a seed bank in Petaluma. Paul, you are from Cork, Ireland.
That's correct. Yes, indeed.
Which, no offense, but I don't think it's known for 200 different varieties of tomatoes, but correct me if I'm wrong. Where is your passion coming from? You're so passionate about it. You have so much knowledge. How does one make it from Cork, Ireland to Petaluma, California?
Well, my family's from Cork, Ireland.
Okay.
You've got two of the Cork crowd here.
Ouch. No, it's amazing, of course. I mean, but tell us your story. Why seeds for you? What's the fascination?
Well, seeds for me came later in life than Jer. Obviously, growing up in Ireland, you always had a garden. So we grew up with our own home garden. I followed my passion in terms of business, coming to the United States in 1990 and worked through 2005, really not in the garden per se. We always had a home garden ourselves, my wife and I and our two kids. Our kids were homeschooled. Our son did outside permaculture classes. So we always were passionate about the garden ourselves. I guess the main eye-opener for me about 3 years ago, traveling in Africa, I part of our son's homeschooling studies were that he would chat to farmers, find out their growing patterns, see where their water comes from, et cetera, et cetera. Mm. And we were shocked at how genetic engineering had made its way into Africa. And these farmers, where they were able to grow their corn and they were kind of virtually self-sustaining, were now reliant on chemicals for weeds and purchasing seeds on an annual basis. They were now not able to save their own seeds. And this was a huge eye-opener for me. So when I heard about Baker Creek and heard they were coming to California, I made it a point to meet with Jer, because this is something that was really of great importance to me.
And so just for our listeners who may be new to this topic, genetic engineering is basically including genes, desired traits of other plants into another plant. And in this case, even jumping the species barrier, something that would never commingle or mix in nature. Of course, famous case using the cold water flounder gene to be inserted in tomatoes to make it more frost resistant. But that was, 10 years ago, and the technology has gone further and further. It's pretty unregulated and definitely untested in terms of long-term effect on both the environment as well as humans. And at the same time, 70% of all our food, or 80% at this point, of all of our food that is not organic contains genetically engineered ingredients. And you were bringing up the issue of liability and patent rights. There are basically two governmental institutions that regulate seeds. One says, the FDA says, they are fine for consumption because there's no difference. And yet the patent law in the US describes them as so different that they are patentable. So now these farmers in Africa that you were describing have to buy the next generation of seeds. There's a contract in place. We had a great show on that with Percy Schmeiser a few weeks ago. If you want to learn more about GMOs, and also the Queens of Green are tackling this topic from 9:30 to 10 every morning here as part of the Green Morning. You can look up thegreenmorning.com and find more information on that. Thank you, Paul, for diving into that. And with us in the studio, Paul Wallace, the manager of the Baker Creek Heirloom Seed Company in Petaluma, literally a seed bank, and Jerry Gettle, the owner and the person who started Baker Creek Heirloom Seed Company. And now on the phone, Mark Kuhl, director of Seeds of Change, the leading organic seed company in the nation, speaking about seeds. From Mark, are you calling in from New Mexico?
I'm calling from New Mexico. Happy to be on your show.
Yeah, great to have you. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing very well.
Tell us about Seeds of Change. How did it start and where are you now?
Well, Seeds of Change was begun about, 21 years ago. We celebrated our 20th illustrious anniversary last year. Very pleased and proud of that. And we were begun 21 years ago in Santa Fe, New Mexico, by a group of people who felt very strongly, consistent with the previous discussions, about the loss of diversity in our food crops. So they set about to collect varieties that were used in gardens across the nation and preserve those. And different than what a lot of the gene banks, the famous Doomsday Vault in Norway, different than what they do, our founders, in my mind, very correctly considered they didn't want to take varieties or seeds or genes in the ends, collect those that represent a lot of diversity, and then freeze those and pretty much not touch them, but rather multiply those and get those back into the environment. So we began a seed company back then as a way to send those seeds out to gardeners, have gardeners use them, benefit from them, continue to adapt them, find new uses for them, etc. And that was kind of the basis for our company.
So, Mark, this is Mark Mulcahy. And are Kenny Ozebald or Howard Shapiro still involved with the Seeds of Change project?
Neither directly. Kenny is still in town doing very much the same thing as we're doing, but with a different organization. And Howard is no longer directly involved with the company, but their thought lives on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So tell us about, for a second, about the Doomsday Vault that you mentioned. You just threw that in, and I do want to catch that and draw the picture for a minute. The Doomsday Vault in Norway, what is that exactly?
Yeah, it's a somewhat negative term, but I use it kind of a little bit on purpose. What it is,
yeah.
Is a...
rightfully so.
On a island called Spitsbergen outside of Norway, under the permafrost layer, there's been a large effort to collect seeds from around the world and freeze those and put those in this vault. There's literally millions of seeds there. They're extremely valuable. It's a very, very high-value operation, very valuable for, you know, mankind in the future, et cetera. My issue with it is that the seeds are sitting there and they're essentially dormant or dead and not being used. They're being refreshed as necessary, but they're really not continuing to evolve such as plants and seeds, you know, normally in nature do. The intent of that, the reason is kind of nicknamed the Doomsday Vault, is the theory is that if there was ever a nuclear explosion or if something happened hugely in climate change and all the Earth's plants died and there was no more source of food, we could go back to that vault and find those seeds and use them. That is a very valuable thing to be able to do, absolutely. But my point is that I would rather actually preserve that diversity by putting it back out into nature.
It's kind of a little bit of Noah's Ark in terms of seeds, right?
Yeah.
And the problem is that it's owned by one company and not by us collectively as the commons, right?
Yeah, that's a true point. It's which is there's a number of large investors in the vault. There's also governments involved. So if I wanted to go and get some seeds, I couldn't. So it's not readily accessible. Whereas most gene banks, including the one we have in the U.S., there's a National Depository in Fort Collins where all varieties of seeds are collected, and the public actually does have access to that. And it's a much more open, more reasonable system, in my opinion.
Yes, Mark Kuhl, director of Seeds of Change. Mark, is Seeds of Change the largest organic seed company in the nation?
We are, but there's not very many. There's very few dedicated organic seed companies. There are others like us who have organic seeds as part of their product offering. So there's many people that play in the field we do, and in fact, we really would encourage more companies to either partially or completely put organic seeds in their product line. From our perspective, to use a business analogy, the pie in the U.S. of organic seeds, so the industry of organic seeds is very, very small. We, perchance, are pretty large, and we've been around for a while, so we have a very large market share. But our growth isn't taking away market share from other organic seed companies. Our growth is together with other organic seed companies, current and new, developing the business larger, making the pie bigger. And then all of us benefit, not just from a business perspective that we do, but also in terms of achieving our mission, which for us is still very strong, of increasing the use of organic seeds, which changes the way food is produced in America.
Yeah, we have Jerry Gettle here and Paul Wallace from the Baker Creek Heirloom Seed Company out of Missouri, who is really specialized. They have, 1,400 varieties, just 200 varieties, different varieties of tomatoes alone, doing all non-treated, not organic, because the volume is all, kind of heirloom, small-scale gardener. That's their clientele. But maybe down the road, there's even a conversation that can take place between Seeds of Change and Baker Creek Heirloom Seed Company to expand your offer of organic seeds the varieties you offer.
We know Baker Creek well. We know other companies like Seed Savers Exchange and others in the industry, and we see these people as colleagues, not competitors. And
oh, absolutely.
Again, like I say, the big goal for us all is to increase the use of organic food in America, which is currently somewhere below 4% to somewhere above, 15, 20, 25%. My dream in the world is, I have a 6-year-old son, and my dream is that he will see organic food as a normal way of life, not as something different.
Right.
So how do you decide what to grow?
It's really market-based. So we actually sell not only to gardeners, but also to professional growers, so people who grow food, mostly market growers and CSAs and people of that scale. So the proof of the pudding is how well a product does for our customers. So we have a very extensive series of trials across the states where we trial our current products as well as proposed new products.
How many varieties do you have, Mark, right now?
We have about 1,200 at the moment.
Uh-huh.
And for us, there's two characteristics, one of which we feel has been forgotten in the past, but there's two characteristics very important as a choice criteria for our new products. One is simply, how do they grow? Do they grow well? Do they perform well? Do they not get diseases? Do they yield good fruits, et cetera? That's kind of a common characteristic, and we have trials in gardens and commercial organic farms across the country to make sure that the products don't just do well in New Mexico, which doesn't mean a lot, but does well in Florida and Wisconsin and Maine and Oregon, California, et cetera. Second thing, however, is we feel in breeding in the last 60 years, the most important trait that has been forgotten, it's the most important trait in food, but it's a trait that's been forgotten, is taste. And similar to the experience with heirlooms, which were often selected by gardeners for better taste profiles, we also include chefs and taste panels in our final product selection. So something grows well and tastes good, that would be a product that we would consider for growing and including in our catalog for next year.
Wonderful. 1,200 varieties, all organic, yes?
100% organic. Nothing we sell is non-organic.
And so one final question. How do you guarantee the germination rate? Or what is you said, you know, with this doomsday vault in Norway, the seeds are basically frozen there. We don't know exactly what will happen to them once they are planted in 10 years or 20 years, what the germination rate will be. But a seed is a living thing, even though it is dormant. There's intelligence stored. It will take in the weather data and the climate data of the plant that it grew in. And it's basically, I mean, a carrot is a memory stick, right? It's amazing, yeah, the intelligence in a seed. How do you handle that?
There's a lot of steps, but if I can be brief, there's probably three important steps. One is that when we produce seeds, we have a protocol like anyone else does in seed production to make sure that the grower is using the right basic seed, is using the right protocol to grow it, absence of diseases and insects and weeds and those things. We harvest the seed at the correct maturity and we clean it correctly, et cetera. So it's a very important step in quality is the production step, you know, the living organism step. Second thing is when seeds are stored, like we do here in Santa Fe, we actually have a cold storage facility, and seeds can actually be stored quite a long time, kind of like the Doomsday Vault, at a cool temperature with low level of humidity and dark. The Doomsday Vault freezes their seeds; they go a little bit further, but we have a 55 degree cold storage facility in which seeds can survive for a long time. We also, however, number three. I think there's four things we do, but number three is we routinely, in fact, every 6 months, we will retest the seeds for germination to make sure they're at or above the standards we set. And by the way, the standards we have are higher than the minimum government regulated seed germination standards. But we test seeds very often to make sure that as they're going out the door, they are per the standards that we require. And then the fourth step is that you're asking about our guarantee for germination, is that if something doesn't do well for any reasons, we will refund the customer, return the seed, or replace the seed. So we have a very, very strong quality control system in place, which, by the way, is kind of an important point, because in the past, organic seeds were, and I'm talking, you know, more in the 50s and 60s, organic seeds were often seen by mainstream America as being low quality, you know, seeds produced by some hippie in their backyard, etc. Nowadays, mainstream America sees organic as a definition of quality.
Yes.
And it's our job to make sure that the seed that supports that food growth is also meeting the same quality standards. So we desire, and most of our colleagues do as well, that the seed that we produce we don't take the fact that it's organic as an excuse that it's lower grade. We actually want to have the seed and organic and of a significant value to the customer and have a physical purity and germination and other quality characteristics that would be similar to any other seed.
Hmm. So I just have a question for you, Mark. Can you tell us something? I mean, you've been around this business for a long time and you travel all over the world. What is something that today, 2010 March, you are excited about that of a seed that a gardener may not be aware of?
Well, that's a really interesting question. There's two things I'm excited about. Number one is there has been over the past 20 years a long, steady, slow decline in the number of people gardening. And it excites me that decline has been reversed due to a number of factors. But people are now taking the time and the energy to gain knowledge of how to grow gardens and grow their own food and teach their kids how to do that. To me, that's very exciting. It's a reversal of the long trends. Obviously, the trend of more and more people, even in tough economic times, buying organic foods in the supermarket is exciting because that does then, you know, pull the demand for our organic seeds through the industry. But specifically on seeds, one of the things that we're working on very hard and have been for about 2 years is the point about diversity again. So not only are we trying to save diversity, things that are in danger of being lost? But we're also looking at what food crops exist out there that people could grow and eat and benefit from. And we're getting away from just traditional seed packs into also selling live plants of many different types, not just the traditional kind of onions and tomatoes and peppers and those kind of things, but we're selling strawberries and rhubarbs and potatoes, garlic. But we also have two new crops, which are Peruvian or Andean tuber crops, similar to potatoes. One's called oca and one's called yacon. And those are food crops that are high in starch, that are very good for people, and that have not traditionally been, you know, known or used in America. So there's a whole bunch of things like that that we're developing in our product line and testing in the ground in various gardens across the states. And when we figure out how to grow those well and ship those well and make them available as organic product, that's going to be very exciting in our mind as a new offering to the public.
Fantastic. Mark Kuhl, the director of Seeds of Change, the leading organic seed company in the nation. And you can find Seeds of Change seeds in any good nursery and gardening store, but also online. Yes, Mark, you are selling seeds online.
www.seedsofchange.com. We're also on Facebook, and we'd love to have people dial in and be able to enjoy the benefits of our organic seeds.
And they will. Mark Kuhl, director of Seeds of Change, the leading organic seed company in the nation. Thanks so much for joining us today, Mark.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks, Mark.
You're listening to an organic conversation here on Green 960. I'm Helga Helleberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And we will talk about the intelligence of seeds when we come back after the break. With us in the studio from the Baker Creek Heirloom Seed Company is the store manager, Paul Wallace, and also the founder, Jerry Gettle, right when we come back.
An Organic Conversation is brought to you by Spotica Skincare. Founded by Janet League Katzen, Spotica is a holistic approach to skincare that is 100% pure and natural, free of synthetic chemicals, and includes organic and wild-crafted ingredients. For more information about Spotica Skincare products and the Spotica Spa, visit spotica.com. That's SPHATIKA.com.
Hi, my name is Earl Herrick. I started Earl's Organic Produce over 20 years ago to bring the best certified organic produce to the San Francisco Bay Area. Still today, Earl's Organic Produce is sourcing only organic fruits and vegetables. Our core principle is healthy relationships with growers, the environment, and the clients we serve. If you are a business interested in offering the most delicious organic produce to your customers, please visit us at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Frye Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Frye never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Frye organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Frye Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines, without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at fryewine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Are you looking for a romantic and unusual location in the Bay Area for your wedding or upcoming anniversary? Toby's Feed Barn offers the perfect venue for your celebration. A rustic barn in the heart of beautiful West Marin, with local organic caterers ready to delight your guests amid bales of hay. Toby's Feed Barn in downtown Point Reyes Station. Open 7 days a week. Family owned and operated since 1942. A West Marin original. For more information, visit tobysfeedbarn.com.
Hi, I'm Peter Walsh. My wife and I founded Manika Jewelry with the intention to offer a different kind of jewelry. Beautiful. Made by local Bay Area artists and without a social or environmental compromise. Our featured designers use reclaimed precious metals and Kimberly certified gemstones. It's jewelry made with heart and soul. Come visit our store just off Union Square at 11 Maiden Lane in San Francisco. or visit our website at manikajewelry.com.
And we are back here to an organic conversation on Green 960. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And we are talking about seeds, heirloom seeds to be specific. In the studio with us, Paul Wallace and Jerry Gettle from the Baker Creek Heirloom Seed Company. And just on the phone with us was Mark Kuhl, Director of Seeds of Change, the leading organic seed company in the nation. In terms of variety, Paul, 1,400 varieties that you offer, it's not just vegetables, right? You have flowers.
We have flowers, a couple of hundred varieties of flowers, and we've got an herb section, maybe 100 varieties of herbs as well, plus a selection of tools and books and locally produced items in the store.
And tell us again, where's that store in Petaluma?
On the corner of Petaluma Boulevard North and Washington Street. It's a big old bank building. We call it the Seed Bank.
So if you're a listener in this area, in the wider San Francisco Bay Area, make that trip up there. It's fascinating. It's an old bank building that is now a seed bank. And in terms of gardening, just want to point out we had Annie Spiegelman on, the Dirt Diva, for her new book, Talking Dirt. A great, great guide through this year if you're interested in getting into gardening or if you are a gardener and just would love more support. The Dirt Diva's new book, Talking Dirt. That show, I think, was a couple, three, 4 weeks ago. So you can go to anorganicconversation.com and listen to the podcast there.
Now, while we still have a little bit of time left, I'd like to ask a question. Is there like an intelligence to seeds? I mean, I always hear about seeds adapting to where they are or and how gardeners kind of know that. Can you just kind of elaborate on that a little bit? I mean, how, like when you plant a seed, like if I get a seed from you, and I plant it in my garden next year, it's a different seed if I save that seed, right?
Yeah, in general, some things take years and years to adapt, and some things might never adapt to certain climates. I mean, if you're trying to grow an orange tree in Montana, it might never happen. But by and large, I mean, if you get a corn, say, from the Andes Mountains in South America or a bean from Thailand or whatnot, generally after a few years, they'll start to acclimatize. You'll select for the shorter season varieties if you're in a shorter season, or if you're in a hot area, you'll select for the plants that do better in hot climates. But as a whole, I mean, for home gardeners starting out, it's better just to get something that's from a climate similar to yours or one that's known to do good in your climate. If you're just starting out, because any area you're in, there's literally hundreds of varieties of vegetables coming from similar climates around the earth that will do great in your spot.
Mm-hmm. So Paul, do you know when you, like if somebody says, I'm kind of in a coastal climate, there's fog, it's a little bit cooler, do you know of the 400 plus varieties that you have in your store, which one come from coastal regions, for example, from Ireland, that may do well in that kind of climate? Do you do that, right? Correlating of?
We do indeed. And a good help for us too is the number of days that something takes to come to fruition. So
what does that mean?
If you're living in Sonoma and you want to grow a watermelon, you'll grow a bigger watermelon in Sonoma than you'll grow in Tamales. So everything needs a certain amount of heat, a certain amount of sunlight, and a certain number of sun hours in a day to come to fruition, to photosynthesize as well. So if you don't have the heat, if you don't have enough sunlight, you got to look for smaller varieties, cherry tomatoes perhaps, smaller watermelon perhaps. In Ireland, you're not going to grow a tremendous eggplant unless you have a greenhouse. So you got to look at your overall climate. And even in Petaluma, where we are, if you go 10 miles in one direction, you will not be able to grow a watermelon. You grow 10 miles in the other direction, you will be able to grow a watermelon. So you have to look at every individual case. And
because the energy conversion from the sun may not be enough to ripen it based on the days that it needs a certain temperature for full germination and
that's correct.
And
yes.
Growth.
Right.
And you know, out of the 400 seats, like if you're in the store, and I guess you're 1,400.
It's okay.
This is all, I can't even imagine.
Maybe he knows some news you don't.
You're sold out. No, 1,400 seats. You know every single seed enough to make that to give somebody advice if they came in and said, this is roughly what I have? Can they bring in soil? Like, do you look at that?
We can look at soil. We also have a horticulturist on the staff. So she's a tremendous source of information. And we have a seed expert on staff as well. So no matter what your question, if one of us can't help, the other can. So we have quite a few resources.
And for those of the folks who live in the Midwest, now they could always come to Missouri, right?
They can, and they can also, you know, visit us online if you're not in the Midwest. But you can always always come to Missouri, especially at our festivals. We have a festival coming up in the first Sunday of each month. So, and we have big festivals in usually in the spring and summer months are our bigger festivals. So the first Sunday of each month, we have anywhere from 400 to 5,000 guests or so, and a little more than that some years, but. So it's always have music and garden speakers and crafters and plants and different things like that on display from different vendors as well. So.
And where's that in Missouri?
It's in southern Missouri. It's near Springfield. It's actually a little town called Mansfield, Missouri is where we're the nearest. And you can just Google us if you're interested in coming, and you'll have all the information on there. So. Mm-hmm.
And actually, we had a comment in an email a few weeks ago from Springfield, Missouri. See,
all right.
They were closing the gap, the seed cap.
Definitely the whole United States, the interest in local and heirloom food is just exploding. I mean, everybody we talk to, I mean, in traditional seed companies, in organic and natural seed companies, everybody, their vegetable seed sales in the last couple of years have went anywhere from 25% up each year to 100% up. So it's amazing right now times for the last actually 3 or 4 years is just exploded. I mean, everybody from the president is gardening now to Oprah and Martha, and everybody is all of a sudden
schools.
Cool now. It's cool now to plant a garden, whereas before it was everybody thought that sounded like work, and now all of a sudden it's cool again. So,
well, I think people are coming back to the beauty of it, the meaning of having a relationship to your soil, to, you know, growing your own food, seeing how difficult it actually sometimes is, appreciating the local farmer or rancher more. I think the whole association with soil and place and terroir and good food, we have gone way too much in the wrong direction, and it's coming back clearly.
Yeah, it's one instance. I mean, that just shows us where we're at is in the last 4 or 5 years, we started testing our corn varieties, and in that amount of time, about 50% of our varieties have came back as we test them for gene altering, have came back contaminated. So we have to keep looking to get fresh seed. We have some seed in back stock as well, and we just have to keep trying to find different farmers, because even farmers in a remote area somehow are getting contaminated. So it's
So you do test your seeds.
We do test all the corn, genetic, which is the primary crop, and it's definitely getting scary when, you know, you can't even grow corn in a remote area anymore without having contamination. If you tested a lot of the organic products in the store, even a lot of them come back with slight traces of gene altering. So
thank you. Even more important, what you do and the website to get seeds from you nationally or even for our listeners in Canada is rareseeds.com, www.rareseeds.com. Over 1,400 varieties that you have in the store in Petaluma as well, and that you can also get online, I guess, right? All 1,400.
Yeah,
wonderful. And that was this week's edition of An Organic Conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For being in the studio today. Paul Wallace,
thank
store manager, and Jerry Gettle from the Baker Creek Heirloom Seed Company and also from the Seed Bank in Petaluma. Again, that website is rareseeds.com, and you have the address of the Petaluma store on there as well, 199 Petaluma Boulevard. And also on the phone with us earlier, Mark Kuhl, director of Seeds of Change, that is seedsofchange.com, the leading organic seed company in the nation for the commercial aspect of growing local and organic food. All speaking about the importance of seeds and their work to save and offer heirloom varieties of produce. Thank you all for being on the show today. An Organic Conversation is produced by our wonderful Heidi Hartley, production assistant, the outstanding Gina Restani. Underwriting production is provided by The Ear, the one and only Mark Van Gelder. Thank you all, and also always thanks to the team here at Green 960, our very own Fab Four, Corey Kelward, Mark McNone, Chris Gardner, and Ricky Filaire. Also always thank you, our listeners, for being part of this show and for actually listening. For our blogs, podcasts, and more information on this show and previous shows, including gardening and GMO shows, please visit our website at anorganicconversation.com. You can also check out the entire Green Morning here on Green 960, and specifically the Queens of Green, who have tackled the GMO issue in the last 3 weeks very much in depth. You can also find us now on iTunes, where you can download An Organic Conversation to your iPhone and iPod and take us with you on the road. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Both look for An Organic Conversation, and we'd love to hear from you. Please send your comments and questions to share@anorganicconversation.com. We'll be back next Saturday at 10 o'clock. Coming up is Your Supernatural Life with Beth Greer. Fantastic show on how to live a healthier life. Stay tuned, and we'll see you again next week. I know that the space